Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 10, Episode 3 of Das Daily Zeitgeist for December 13th, 2017. Happy birthday, Caitlin, my little sister. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Potatoes O'Brien, and I am thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Good morning, everyone. And it is a good morning, and I really, really excited to really talk today because we have so many good things to talk about. For once.
Happy day.
Yes.
Happy days are here again. And we are thrilled to be joined by our guest, the hilarious comedian Megan Gailey.
Thank you. You thought you had a potato name.
Yeah. You have the potatoist of
name.
Although Potatoes O'Brien, apparently a dish.
Is it?
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, that's where
is
it
is. Is that like potatoes au gratin?
Probably, okay. Except like
oh,
worse.
Oh, whoa. I never even thought about that.
It's like instead of having other stuff, it's got like dirt and
oh, it's got dirt?
Grass.
That's
and,
fun.
No, I don't know.
It's just like always, it's always in a frozen like a, bag. It's like
it's
bell peppers and country potatoes.
Oh,
you know, like
okay.
When you get breakfast
no, those
potatoes.
Those are good. I like those.
Yeah.
I like
no, I'll take it.
O'Brien.
I'll take it. It's a proud tradition. So, Megan, what is something that is in your search history that you think is revealing about who you are as a human being?
Wow. I didn't know if it had been revealing. I got rid of all of
it
that.
It is like the singular thing that people must know about you.
Well, in it that I stumbled upon last night was gummy James Harden beard.
What?
Wait, gummy James Harden beard?
So they make gummies. You know the really good, it's Trolley? Is that the really good gummies?
Yeah, yeah, they make the hamburgers and stuff.
Yeah, I don't want to be giving, like, ad space away.
It's fine. This is how we lure them in.
Right.
They got great gummies. They make James Harden beard gummies.
Like his face or just his beard?
No, just his beard.
Trolley Sour Bite Weird Beards is what they're called. The James Harden edition.
Yeah,
good
James
for you,
Harden.
James
get
Harden.
That money, man.
Oh, maybe his face is a part of it.
But they're multicolored, like they have like.
But the beard is
bright
bizarre.
Orange and pink, and
how did he do that?
I don't know.
That is some good, yo. Whoever's
yo,
handling
James Harden is like the most popular, like marketable dude in the NBA. Secretly, you'd think because he has a bad personality and his game is not fun to watch,
right.
He would not be like that big of a deal, but.
I guess so. He's like pretty clean. He's
just cool.
Yeah,
he's just like a cool.
Yeah,
dude.
But people like Steph too.
But yeah,
some people think
Steph,
he's too light-skinned.
I think Steph is, like, so traditionally marketable
boring.
That people are bored by him.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's just, like, I know that I should like him, and therefore I'm bored by him. Whereas James Harden's kind of the bad boy. It's like...
He's got that beard.
Yeah, he's got that beard.
He's like, the Reggie Watts of the NBA.
I would rather eat Russ's head, though.
You would rather eat Russ's
and
head?
And I know he doesn't have a beard, but there's other fun beards in the NBA. And in baseball. And in football. There's tons of fun beards.
Are you a big sports fan?
I am. I'm a huge sports fan.
What's your favorite sport?
To watch? I mean, I go...
Well, you're a Hoosier, so it's got to be basketball, right?
You know, I do love the Pacers, and this team has been especially fun to watch. I love Victor Oladipo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm so happy to have him. He's a new neighbor of my parents. So I'm thinking about writing him a letter and putting it in his mailbox for
right.
Christmas. But I do love the Colts. But they're so bad now. But I don't care.
It's a tough time.
I think they're cute and sweet, and I love them, and... Even when they're bad, I'm like, that's okay. I know that they're good.
The Pacers fired my dad one time. My dad's Jim O'Brien. He used to coach the Pacers like 6 years ago. Yeah.
Okay.
So
I remember
I'm
that era.
I'm not a fan.
I'm so sorry.
Extremely hard
Jack,
against
Jack, put
I'm
that actually, razor blade down.
I'm not
like,
a fan
you know
necessarily
is?
Of the front office.
Yeah, no. Well,
right.
He's gone now. Brett's gone.
I like to ask this. In your mind, who's the greatest Pacer of all time?
Reggie Miller.
I like that answer.
Like, who else would it be?
I mean, some people have, like, weird, like, esoteric, like, favorites, like Rick Smits.
But he's not my favorite Pacer, but he is the greatest Pacer of all time.
Oh, whoa. No, I'm asking you. So you...
Oh, my favorite Pacer of all time is Jalen Rose.
Yeah. Wow. That's a great answer.
That's a great answer.
Because,
yeah.
Like,
fuck
look
Reggie
at,
Miller, right?
Reggie's
what about Jermaine
so
O'Neal,
fun.
Man? Remember that?
Yeah.
For a hot minute?
Of course.
For a very hot and
very hot,
very,
very cold,
quick
instantly.
Minute.
Yeah. You can't pick any really Malice at the Palace boys. I mean,
I
I love that. Yeah. It was one of my favorite events in sports.
Oh, it's one of my, now looking back on it, I can appreciate it. But at the time, that team was going to probably win the title.
Yeah,
they had a shot.
And then everybody
was they were gone. Mortified.
But they came out. That was on a Friday night. It was my freshman year of college. Steven Jackson and Ron Artest came out of the tunnel at the Colts game on Sunday, and the place, like, was electric. And then 2 weeks later, everyone was like, we hate them. They thugs. Oh, I was
No.
We like them.
They're passionate.
We like them.
They're just passionate.
They don't take shit from people, especially not a fucking fan.
No.
They will come into Detroit, the stands for you.
Right. Good for them. I'm still on their side.
Love Jamal Tinsley, too. You remember him?
Jamal Tinsley,
the point guard who...
He got
was involved in a
shooting outside of a strip club and a shooting outside of the Conrad.
Yes, downtown. multiple shootings and
never was that
the
good.
He was pretty good. He's a great passer. He
but
had
that
like
many
a
shootings.
Vision. but for two shootings, that's too many shootings for a guy who just has incredible vision of the court. Megan, what's something you think is overrated?
I really worry that this is going to get me in trouble, but I read it and I think Cat Person is overrated.
Okay, now tell people what Cat Person is. We mentioned it on yesterday's episode. I'm super intrigued by the idea that there is a piece of short fiction that is trending on the internet. So
it's from The New Yorker.
Okay.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I get The New Yorker. I've read maybe two articles in a year. Because you start reading them and then you realize there's 17 pages and you're like, I got shit to do.
And they show up hard and fast.
Yes. Oh,
the second you get through and you're like, fuck, another one's just
yes. And I fly all the time. So I'll like bring it on the plane to be like, look, I'm trying. I'm okay. Hello. I'm on the team. And then I like put it down and just turn on Real Housewives on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
So story. Culturally valuable.
Of
I would
course.
Say.
Yes, you know, yeah. You got to know everything that's happening.
Right. Well, it depends on which one, but we'll get into that later.
Right.
It's all about Atlanta.
Cat Person is short fiction about like a texting relationship that then like turns physical at some point. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people are like heralding it as this, nothing has spoken to what women experience and like the idiosyncrasies of communication between men and women. And I think they're just giving it more power than it deserves. Cause I read it and thought, oh yeah, that's why you don't marry everybody you date. You know, like you got to fuck some bad people to realize that they suck.
Right.
Maybe that makes me a bad feminist.
That's like learning. Well, I mean, I think
it's
objectively,
learning.
If we even take it outside of dating, right. Or sex purely, like even when you're looking for a job, you got to take some shitty jobs to begin knowing what your dream job is too.
And
like it's part
yes.
of the process of figuring yourself out.
And so she sort of builds this guy up in her mind and then he ends up being worse than what is in her mind, and I'm like, yeah, but that...
Is he like a cat version of a werewolf? Is that
no,
what I'm getting?
The only cat part of it is he has two cats.
He says
he has two cats, and then she never sees them.
Huh.
Yeah.
I actually started reading the story. Now that I've Googled it, I started reading it, and I was like, huh, this seems to be written by a millennial because of just like a couple things. Like, she's like turned on by the fact that he has like a tattoo or something
yeah.
like that. And
they're like texting banter
texting,
is good.
Yeah.
And I understand all of that, but, and like, I read it and maybe it was because everyone else is saying all these glowing, like it's a movement. And I'm like, as someone who fucked a lot of fuckboys, I don't think this is a movement.
Right. All right.
Let them know.
Megan, what's something that is underrated?
I just finished. This is so, I guess I'm not embarrassed. I just finished the J.K. Rowling series she wrote under the pseudonym as Robert Galarith or something, and it was excellent. I really loved it, and I'm really proud of her. I also love her. I love when people tweet at her that they're burning her books, and she's like, I don't care. You already bought it. I live in a fucking castle.
Right.
I think she's incredible, and the books were great. I really suggest them. There's only three of them. I think there's going to be more. I've joined some sort of like internet group that talks about it.
Wow.
And JK, we're on your side. We're rooting for you. We love you. Thank you.
And when you say you're on her side, you're talking about the Johnny Depp stuff?
Oh, I'm talking about the Trump stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, what do you think about the Johnny Depp stuff?
I didn't know she had any Johnny.
Oh, so,
I mean, I hate Johnny Depp.
Right. So because
and I'm fine going on
he's in the new, he's playing a main character in the upcoming films. A lot of women were like, how are you going to have this dude still play a really important character in this series? Because, you know, he's clearly on record having, you know, verbally abused Amber Heard and things like that.
So, I hated him before that, and I just like everyone to know that. I think he's annoying. He's just too much. It's like, you don't need eyeliner on all the time. You
he's,
know,
yeah,
you
he's can, like, yeah.
You, it's like too much.
It feels forced.
I didn't even know that he was assaulting, verbally assaulting women.
Yeah, like Amber Heard. Yeah, they had a pretty messy relationship.
So now I'm even more upset.
Wait, because I just know, like, that was, like, a thing that she had to then come out because she hadn't said anything, and a lot of fans are saying, like, you've been such a great advocate for women, like, why this person? And she sort of basically
said,
was like, well, you know, like, we thought he was great for the part, and, like, this is something that two adults, like, agreed to, you know, put behind them. So, and she said something like, conscience can't be determined by committee and things like that. It was very... I think it was unsatisfying for some people, but, you know,
yeah. Either
way, you're going to buy the books.
I don't know enough about it. I'll read
up. No, I'm not here to say, like, hey, what's your opinion on that? But I just thought that's what you were referring to.
But I do love her, and I do hate Johnny Depp. So now I guess I'm torn.
Yeah. So she's getting it from her books are being burned by Trump followers because she criticized Trump, and then she's getting shit from the left for...
Again, bitch lives in a castle.
I know. Yeah.
She's like, I'm sorry, like, I can't see you from up here.
She's like, actually, exactly. If you could burn them and then bring them to my house, it's cold in here. It's very expensive to heat because it's so big.
Right. She's like, but again, I have so much money, I don't give a fuck. Yeah.
Well, thank you for that very literary over-under.
Yeah.
Megan. We appreciate that.
Oh my gosh, you're welcome.
All right, let's get into format. We're trying to take a sample of the ideas that are out there changing the world, trying to take the temperature of the national shared consciousness of the human species. Say we're at a crispy 98.6 right now.
I think we're 90%.
Healthy.
Yeah, we're getting
feeling good.
Feeling healthy.
And the way we like to open this up is by asking our guest for what's something that is part of the zeitgeist, something that the media believes or has told us that is not actually true.
This is going to be really hard-hitting and probably tough for some of your listeners to hear.
Oh, man.
But I do not believe that any of the HGTV couples are in love.
Whoa.
I think they all hate each other.
The HGTV couples.
There's like stuff like the
flip or flop. The Gaines.
The flip or flop, they did divorce though, right? And they're just together because they need that check for their kids.
Now they're saying they're getting back together, but there's new flip or flop people because that's flip or flop. Like Southern California.
Right.
Now there's flip or flop Vegas, flip or flop Atlanta, flip or flop someplace else.
So, Jack, you look confused. These shows are like these couples that just sort of personify like these like very gender normative things. It's sort of like the man is the sledgehammer, and he's always pushing against his wife's zany requests for different kinds of decorative things.
She wants stuff expensive, right. And she knows how to
pick
fabrics.
They flip houses.
Yeah, and then they walk into a house, and he's like, well, we're going to have to do this. And she's like, I'm really envisioning this. And it's just sort of like these couples who flip houses. But yeah,
right.
I guess maybe they aren't in love.
But they're on the cover of People magazine all the time.
Right.
That's why I'm saying media. It transcends HGTV. They've done a really great job branding them.
Right.
But I think they all hate each other.
Yeah.
I think if you were to have like a secret hidden camera, that would be the hit show.
Yeah, because I know some people just do really watch it because they like the idea of like this couple working together. But also,
ew.
If you watch reality TV, you're like, man, this is all fucking bullshit.
I hate couples working together. I think that's gross. Go to an office, get away from each other.
There you go.
And then come back, have dinner, have sex, and go to sleep. All day together.
Do it all over again.
No, that's too much.
Yeah, that would be a lot.
I love my boyfriend, and I'm happy he's not here right now.
So, you guys, Doug the motherfucking Jones.
Doug Jones!
The black men and especially women of Alabama pulled off a huge upset last night, won a Senate seat for the Democratic Party in the reddest of red, Alabama.
Yeah.
So we're just going to talk real quick up top about the immediate reaction, then we'll dig in a little deeper later. But first off, Roy Moore called and, you know, issued he was like, congratulations on this great he said
right.
He was like, nah, the Lord will provide. I can't have possibly lost this election.
Yeah, that's a wild one where he was like, God will decide.
Right.
So, I mean, God decided.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
But see, that's how God works in Alabama. It's like, if it's not on your side, then it can't be God.
But isn't the whole Christian mantra like God's plan? So it's like, Roy, this was God's plan.
He actually said that in his thing. He was like, but the one thing we know is whatever happens, it is God's plan. And I was like, yo, it happened.
Yeah, so
like,
that's
God
God's plan.
But
God would not like that.
He's not a fan of this version of God's plan.
Are they going to do a recount? I mean, like, is that
No, there's not enough.
He would have to pay for it. So if it's under a half a percentage point, they will automatically do a recount.
Okay.
If it's over that, then the person who's requesting the recount has to actually pay for it themselves.
Okay.
And, you know.
And he won by 1.5%.
Yeah, he won by 1.5%.
Oh, okay. But so he could, there's enough money in the GOP, as we know, that he could get that funded.
Yeah.
Are they ready to be done with him?
I think they're done with him.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think everybody was like, well, that was embarrassing.
Well, and also they're like, thank God, because we don't then have to be like, hey, so what are you going to do about this pedophile in the Senate? Like, they don't have to do that anymore. It's like, okay, we'll figure it out down the road.
So you think when they were like, we'll let the people of Alabama decide, Mitch McConnell secretly was like, and please, decide the right way? I don't think so. I think Mitch was like, give me this pedophile.
I think he just said he didn't want to be so overtly against him that he dialed it back to being ambiguous. So that way, when Steve Bannon tries to attack him, he's like, you see, Mitch McConnell, and we'll get into all that because there's so many dimensions of the GOP.
Cowardice.
Yeah, exactly.
Horse visual was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The best was horse Twitter flaming him for not knowing how to ride that horse.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They're
like,
ride it right?
They're like, he's holding the reins wrong. The horse looks confused.
I was picturing him riding it backwards, facing the ass of the horse.
Right, side saddle.
Being like, what? My favorite tweet on this was, from Andy Zeisler. She said, guys, of course the sex predator doesn't take no for an answer, which I thought was pretty much right on point.
Yeah, he's not willing to concede. We'll see.
Also not taking no for an answer. Fox News was their immediate reaction was, yeah, but see, Roy Moore was a flawed candidate. This result is very specifically based on his character and not a repudiation of Trump or a shift towards Democrats in the state.
But who cares?
Which is fine. That's a very specific response to that.
Well, yeah, but Fox News is meant to be the channel you go to figure out Tell me it's going to be okay.
Right.
If you're a GOP, if you're a Republican and you're really shook up about this, you kind of need Fox to be like, don't worry, man. This guy was what they said. I think uniquely flawed is one thing I heard many times yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I was like, motherfucker, you mean he's an accused pedophile? Don't obscure that by calling him uniquely
flawed. I think
it's
good for the Democrats, though, to basically Fox News is being like, shh, take your bottle.
Right.
Go to sleep.
It's
that didn't happen when Trump, everyone was enraged when Trump won.
Yeah, we were
won.
Just like, we fucked that up.
Yeah,
yeah.
Really bad. We didn't take a bottle.
Yeah.
But we cried.
But it's that's great. I hope you guys go with the rhetoric that oh no, we're fine. 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 He was a pedophile. We're fine.
Because
it's then that's how you can sneak in and take some seats.
Yeah, right.
Well, yeah.
They got to figure out how they're going to market themselves.
This is sort of how the cycle goes, right? The people who won are sort of passive and, believe that they have things in the bag, and that continues until they suffer some catastrophic defeat, at which point they wake up and, like you said, giving themselves the bottle. And
I also don't like that there's people being like, it should have been by a bigger margin. It's like, shut up.
Yeah,
we won.
Yeah. Right.
The pedophile lost. Can't you just be happy? And I was sitting as the polls closed being like, he's going to win. It was astounding that Doug
Jones
won. The
pedophile didn't win. Yeah.
So let's just take the victory and stop counting the tiny pieces about
it. Yeah, right.
Let's thank black women and then and
it'll never be a perfect. It'll never be a perfect victory. You know
right.
what I mean? I think people only wanted 100% Doug Jones. There we go.
He wouldn't. He would have dropped out of the race if he thought he didn't have a chance.
Right.
So,
and Trump has been like, "See, this is why I said it should have been Luther Strange and not Roy Moore." We'll get more into his response and what this means for Trumpism going forward. So we will be right back. And we're back. So the USA Today op-ed board really came for Trump this morning. I remember during the 2016 election, it was considered weird that the USA Today endorsed a candidate and that they endorsed Hillary, but they just usually don't because they are the vanilla flavor of U.S. journalism in general.
Yeah, they're like a coloring book.
Right, exactly. But they just went out on a limb and just came for Trump in response, mostly to the tweet he put out yesterday in response to Senator Gillibrand. Basically, the article, their response may as well have been written in all caps. It was pretty incredible, but so was his tweet. I'm a little ashamed we didn't talk about it yesterday.
Because we had a lot going on.
We had a lot going on, but his tweet basically implied that, you know, she criticized him and the fact that he had, you know, all these accusers out there accusing him of sexual misconduct. And he responded by implying that she was in his office offering to trade sexual favors for his support, basically.
He said that?
Yeah. Yeah. His tweet was...
it was Spice City.
About more.
Yeah. His tweet was, lightweight Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, a total flunky for Chuck Schumer and someone who had come to my office, quote unquote, begging for campaign contributions not so long ago.
He said, quote unquote, begging?
And then parenthetical, and would do anything for them.
Ew!
Is now in the ring fighting against Trump. Very disloyal to Bill and crooked. Used. So, look, first of all, we already know he's the dumbest motherfucker out there. But also, Kirsten Gillibrand is a fucking ride or die. Like, she is all about fighting sexual harassment and gender equality and, like, you know, protecting women who are in the military from being assaulted. That's, like, her raison d'etre, like, as a senator. So when you want to go and now call her out, like, you have fucked with the wrong... She is not the one to fuck with about this. So, you know, he opened up that can of worms and she came out pretty quickly. He's like, it's a sexist smear. I will not be silenced. And also, Gillibrand 2020.
Right. So the USA Today op-ed board's response was, quote, a president who would all but call Senator Kirsten Gillibrand a whore is not fit to clean the toilets in the Barack Obama presidential library or to shine the shoes of George W. Bush. That's
if it was
spicy.
Me, and this is why I'm not running for president, I'd be like, yeah, I said I would do anything for a campaign, and I mean that.
Right.
I think the American people would like to know that I will literally suck the grossest dick on earth to make sure this country is safe.
That's someone with our interest at heart, right?
Right.
But I'm not saying that's what she's saying. That's what I would say. I always think about if naked pictures of me got released, I'd be like, yeah, I look good. Pass them around. Give them to everybody.
Right.
You should see the other ones.
It's interesting because, like, right, is this a signal that now something as safe as USA Today is, like, coming out against Trump? Like, are the tides turning?
No.
Right. I guess that would be the question is this, and I don't think this was written with the knowledge that Doug Jones won necessarily, but...
No, because I think it actually came out yesterday morning.
Okay. Yeah. So I just think that it might be part of an overall anti-Trump wave that is cresting. It could be seen that way. I don't necessarily know that it is.
I just think his base, you know, will go, USA Today is garbage. USA Today is fake. You know, like, unfortunately, and to his credit, he's created such a foolproof way to say that everyone else is wrong and against him.
Right.
Right. But I think also, I guess part of that is now, you know, obviously this wave of criticism, who knows if that will actually affect his ability to stay in office. But what it does, I think, show is that people are now there is definitely, like, more people who are willing to be like, no, this is bullshit. Like, are we going to accept this? Doesn't look like we are. And again, yesterday's election, I think, is starting to also show that he can scream all he wants. But at the end of the day, he was not able to affect that election properly,
Is,
I think, one of the best things, which I think is kind of what we want to talk about next, was sort of, you know, now that Doug Jones won, like, what does that mean? Because it has more than just meaning that, okay, we're cutting down the GOP majority in the Senate. We're also seeing many other things that are going to be affected by this.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that in the wake of Jones' victory is that Democrats are now demanding that they delay voting on the tax bill until Jones is seated so he can actually properly represent the state of Alabama to see if we want to completely fuck over generations to come with this crazy, like, mega money giveaway.
Right.
And so, you know, and the Dems do have a point, right? Like, when Ted Kennedy died, Scott Brown took over his seat, who was a Republican, and Harry Reid, like, delayed a vote on Obamacare because there's a lot of pressure. Like, all right, fine, get him in there, whatever. And they waited. They respected that. And then also think about fucking McConnell the last year refusing to confirm a Supreme Court justice, mm-hmm, because he was like, well, let's wait for the people to decide, and then we'll have a vote.
Right.
And then we'll have a vote. Well, guess what, motherfucker? You are now you're in that position, except shoes on the other foot.
I know, but they play dirty.
Of course, right. Which is crazy. So at worst, they will try and just rush the vote before he's actually able to be sworn in. Or, you know, like if they can't agree on the bill or whatever and the voting is delayed, Doug Jones may be sworn in at the time that they do vote on it. But like whether or not, yes, will he do something crazy, like be like refuse to seat him until that vote happens? We don't know, but that wouldn't look good. But again, they don't really give a fuck.
I think they kind of like when they don't look good because their base likes it.
Right.
Because when they anger the mainstream media, that scores points for them.
They also don't care about precedent.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's why it's so hard to like fight them. Because they don't, all decency has gone out the window. So it's, but yeah, I'm like, get down to Washington. Get out of Washington.
So apparently 8 minutes ago, the GOP leaders announced that they have reached a deal to cut the corporate rate to 21% and lower the top individual rate to 37%. And the headline on Drudge Report right now is rush, exclamation point, tax bill by Xmas. So the whole right wing is concerted in this effort to just sneak this thing by as quickly
that
as possible.
That fucking no one wants.
Right.
It's the worst polling fucking tax.
Well, no, that's not true. Very rich people and political donors want it.
A majority of people are not fucking with it.
They have feelings too, Miles.
Yeah, I mean, but fuck that, bro.
How would you feel if
I had that much money, I wouldn't give a fuck.
I wouldn't have feelings.
You'd think so.
Well, let's do the experiment. Right. And I will be happy to part ways.
There's a lot of rich people that don't like it too. You know,
And
they, you know, they live in LA.
Right.
But they do have a conscience. Like, no, I'll give my money.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, there are
a lot of these.
Or I'll pay my taxes, and I'm giving my money. It's paying your taxes.
You know, another thing though too with this election is that signals maybe Trump is actually losing his effect on people. Like clearly, his supporters weren't as motivated to come out to vote for Roy Moore as they should have been, because the Democrats like turned the fuck up and turned out to vote.
Right.
And Republicans, I think, again, like there are a few analysts saying that most of his supporters, like hardcore supporters, weren't really interested in politics to begin with. So for them to understand the stakes of Roy Moore getting elected was kind of abstract to them. So that kind of worked in Doug Jones's favor. But I think what it's interesting to see is that, like you're saying, last night Trump had a tweet that was like, very civil for some reason.
And clearly
he passed out from the McDonald's and somebody was like, get his phone and let's just do something. Because then this morning, he sounded like a person who is not being listened to and feels powerless, because he was like, the reason I originally endorsed Luther Strange and his numbers went up mightily is that I said Roy Moore will not be able to win the general election. I was right. Roy worked hard, but the deck was stacked against him. I'm sorry, the deck? Do you mean people not being outraged that you're trying to put up a like racist pedophile?
When they tweet for him, they got to do a better job. It's like if you're an F student and then you buy a paper from an A student, your teacher's like, that's not yours.
Right.
You don't know how to spell separate. No, this isn't him.
Right.
I think he has lost some of the let's give him a chance people.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think he'll never lose anyone's better than Hillary people. But if we can grab some of those, let's give him a chance over to, okay, you gave him a chance and you've seen it and it's a goddamn disaster. So will you come over here? I think they're willing to be like, yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe.
And
maybe his chance was bad.
I think most of his base though too is motivated by race more than even like misogyny or not trusting Hillary. Cause I think,
well, they go hand in hand in that lovely little disaster.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, yeah, maybe Trump is losing his power. And if you really look at it, like, yeah, most of his power, like when he's able to do shit, it's because he has a GOP leadership behind him in Congress, where it's like Paul Ryan is taking the charge to get shit through, or Mitch McConnell is taking the charge to get shit through. He's not really able from his fucking phone be like, yeah, run that. Because people don't get, like, I think he's starting to, you know, he's losing his grip a little bit.
Right. I mean, when going into the election, he won Alabama by how many percentage points? Like
something
30? Yeah, like a ton. And I mean, he was still a purely anti-establishment figure.
Right.
You know, he could just sit there and lob bombs at the establishment and talk about being a guy who's going to drain the swamp and, you know, all this shit. But yeah, like you said, Megan, we've had a year to see how this goes. And, you know, he has become establishment in a lot of ways. He's failed in a lot of ways. And
the swamp was not drained.
The swamp was not drained.
They filled it up.
Right.
The swamp is full.
Now with more gators.
People can make jokes all they want, but the people from any state are not dumb. They can see this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, he's definitely lost ground. I mean, his favorability rating in Alabama is now sub 50.
Some of them are dumb, though. But right. some Democrats are dumb, too.
They're dumb
people
everywhere.
We give people too much credit. Some of them are very dumb.
Yeah. So now this leads to, because, oh, shit, they took the biggest L. They lost the reddest state. Like, now all the finger-pointing has begun, and there are basically two schools of finger-pointing. One is the Bannon side saying, look at Mitch McConnell and the establishment. Like, they didn't support Roy Moore, and that's why he lost. And then you have all the establishment GOP people who are like, yo, Bannon is a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
He totally fucked up by, getting in Trump's ear and making everyone back this pedophile who was never going to win or could have won, but, looked really bad for everyone. And it's just great because now you're starting to see, a lot of people in GOP are really trying to distance themselves from Steve Bannon and almost acting as if, this experiment is done. Like, we don't need to listen to this guy. And especially what was crazy is, you have people like Pete King, who's from New York, who's, a very hardcore conservative. And, you'd think he was down with most of the shit Bannon said. This is him throwing Bannon's ass under the bus this morning when asked about the election.
This guy does not belong on the national stage. He looks like some disheveled drunk that wandered onto the political stage. This is not the type of person we need in politics. And last night's election was a manifestation of a revulsion by the American people.
So, okay. But, his number one thing he said was that he looks like shit.
Right.
We know, dude. We see him.
Well, yeah. And I think it's more of the strategy, right? As he even tweeted, he said his act is tired, inane, and morally vacuous. So, again, it's easy to, distance yourself after you take the L because, let's be real, all you guys were scared shitless of Steve Bannon a few months ago.
Right.
And, don't want his people to come after you. But now you're starting to see, because they lost that seat, now everyone's really in their feelings and being like, well, I think he's done or whatever.
Yeah. Even within the last month, the mainstream media has been holding him up as this genius chess player. I do wonder if that is partially strategy by the mainstream media, knowing that if you give somebody too much credit, they're people are going to start hating him. If you give someone like that too much credit in the mainstream media.
Well, I think it's also
might not be strategy, but I think that definitely probably happens.
Or also it's backlash from people who just saw this outsider gobble up a bunch of influence and power in the party and be like, who the fuck, where did you come from?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because you got this one guy elected and now they're like, okay, fuck off. Let us ruin the country how we used to do it.
Well, but I think they've always hated him for being an outsider who came in and got a lot of, it's just that he had the ability to claim that he was going to, wield all this influence, and now he no longer has that ability.
Yeah. So the infighting will begin because now, there are murmurs, the Bannon camp is like, okay, well, now we're really going to war with the establishment. And the establishment is like, we're done with Steve Bannon. So that will play out wonderfully over the next, 11, 12 months when we have midterms.
Yeah.
And finally, what we really need to talk about is black women coming out and really winning this seat. When you look at the numbers, 98% of black women and 93% of black men voted for Doug Jones. When you compare that to white voters, only 23% of white men and 32% of white women voted for Jones.
Christ.
So white women, again, there's a problem here. Are we going to keep choosing race over gender? Obviously with Trump, sure, if you wanted something different, I understand that. But in this case, if your choices are between a sexual predator and a Democrat, or someone who's in line with an agenda that might be favorable to you because you like the kind of hot takes Roy Moore has, we have to figure out what's going on there. But more importantly, are we going to begin to listen to the needs of black voters? Because it's been, people of color, not just black people, have always been just sort of of course you're going to vote Democratic. And then that's all they have to rely on, give a few rousing speeches at a rally, but not deliver on anything that will actually affect the community in a positive way. Because when you really look at it, there's very little representation, for black women, even in, in Congress. Kamala Harris is the only black woman in the Senate, and black women make up, 3.6% of Congress. So there are ways that we, I think as a nation really need to begin to see the power of, this voting bloc and to also begin to represent its interests too. Let's have the DNC prop up more candidates and deliver more infrastructure for candidates.
Instead of being like, oh man, we need to recruit poor white people now because we lost that last election. Instead of being like, no, that you didn't get any people of color out to vote for Hillary because you didn't focus on them enough.
Yeah, and it just shows you when you have a candidate that people, can to understand who they are and excited about him or her, and also understand what the stakes are in the election, people will fucking go out and vote.
Yeah.
But like when that's not communicated properly, you get low turnout and you don't
get. Do they have the numbers on the turnout though?
In terms of like what percentage?
Yeah, like how many people in the state voted. Because, I mean, those numbers look incredible, but it's like if it was 46% of people, then it's still not good.
Right.
No, no, not at all. But I think
the turnout was above what they were expecting. And also just in terms of black voters, they were saying that they needed to get at least 25%, which I think is over the representation of like how many black people.
It's just a it's a shame.
The population is 25%.
The population is 20 to 25%, and last night they got 25 to 30%. So black voters were actually overrepresented.
They have to cancel out a lot of things.
Yeah.
If as the only woman in here, I'd like to speak to as the white woman. Places like Alabama have very, very the entire country has very ingrained misogyny.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when you saw Hillary lose white women, a lot of that is what is happening, sadly, in those individual homes, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I have friends who voted for Hillary and told their husbands they voted for Trump because their husbands said they would leave them if they voted for Hillary.
Jesus.
And so that's like a – that's something that – you can't deny that that's happened. Are there also horribly racist white women in Alabama? Yeah. And generationally, I think they will stop. They will cease to exist because their daughters or these women that they raise will grow up and be like, oh no, this is bad. You know, I think it's older white women. I really do believe that.
Yes.
I hope that's true.
No, I think so. No.
And I don't think it's 25 and below. I don't even think it's 30 and below.
The demographics actually back you up. So, the one thing that made me feel better about the future is that 18 to 29, 60% voted for Jones. 30 to 44, 61% voted for Jones. And then once you get over 44, so like 45 to 64, 51% voted for Moore. And then 65 and over, 59% voted for Moore. So part of it is just we have to wait for
no, absolutely.
The worst we have to keep having inspiring women. We need to have more black women. We need to have more Latino women. We need to have more women of color. We need to have more men of color. I don't think white women are lost. I think old white women are lost.
No, yeah,
and that's like, okay, good riddance.
Yeah, and to clarify, I don't mean to generalize that all white women are either voting for their race or gender or anything like that, but in small demographic numbers, that's kind of what we were looking
at. And we fucked up, you know? We fucked up the general election.
When I think now, now we've proven we can all come together to do this. So now let's bring everybody into the conversation, I think, is what this next step is really about, and to create this thing that people of color just can't be counted on for a vote.
Yeah.
That now, like, if like that, there's been very little reciprocity for the being a dependable voting block to count on, and how that, you know, how that reverberates, or how that what changes come out of their life as a result of that.
I think the Me Too and all of the sexual harassment and sexual assault movement that has happened will only help white female demographics go, oh, I don't have to do what a man tells me to do. I don't have to feel, and voting aside, I don't have to like this if I don't like it. I don't have to go see the Avengers if I don't want to. I could go finger myself to Mona Lisa Smile on Blu-ray again, you know, or whatever we want to do. It's like, I think the push is happening. And unfortunately with white women, we may just have to be patient, but they fucked up a lot of things.
Well, I think it's easier too, because when you're oppressed, it's easier to get unified under that. And I think women of color especially have two dimensions of oppression they have to deal with. It's misogyny and race. And it's easier too when you have a male candidate who is like racist and a sexual predator. That's really easy to activate.
Oh, of course.
And, you know, and I think it is harder too, because part of, you know, if that sort of oppression isn't very real for somebody, it's very easy to sort of get lost in how you vote or the partisanship of it all. And yeah, I think it is very, there's a lot to be optimistic about, because yeah, those demographic numbers show that clearly, like, younger people, like, once we begin to inherit the earth in a few years, we'll probably see see some shifts in
feminism
policy.
Also has to change. Feminism has to start recognizing women of color and their issues.
Absolutely.
And not just talk about white feminism. And so it's like, I mean, we have to start listening.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the first step.
So yeah, I hope that's like a huge thing to come out of the election too, is realize, wow, like, okay, we really need to, like, let's fucking all sit together at the table and figure this shit out. Cause it can't just be like, yay, thanks for that. You know, thank you, black people. And then tomorrow it's like, man, they're fucking kneeling for the anthem. Like, yo, let's fucking address the issue why people are kneeling for the anthem. Like, let's
Lives matter. Yeah. Because guess what? They're the only ones voting for you.
Right. Exactly. So Megan is actually not going to be here for this next interview. She has to run, but
very important tings that tings you have to
attend going
to.
Down.
Yeah, I got to do LA things.
And have a phone interview coming up with Jared Holt
from Right Wing Watch, one of our favorite websites. We'll talk about that more, though.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. Okay, so we are about to go to our interview with Jared Holt from Right Wing Watch. Again, Megan had to leave, so you won't be hearing from her, and then we'll be back to real time and Megan after the interview. Enjoy.
Someone from one of our favorite websites, Right Wing Watch, Jared Holt, who works for them, is here with us to talk about a little bit about the alt-right, and what's, you know, we want to get the temperature of what's going on in the land of Pepe the Frog. So Jared, are you there? You are there, right? Hello?
Yeah. Hey, Miles, what's up?
How are you? How are you? And you're also here with Jack, just so you know. So there's two people doing this interview. So yeah, I mean, obviously we wanted to talk to you because Right Wing Watch is a very great website and tool for us because we would like to keep track of all the things going on. But can you tell us a little bit about what you do at Right Wing Watch and sort of what your role is there in terms of the alt-right?
Yeah, so my role with Right Wing Watch is to research and sort of monitor the movements and the narratives coming out of the fringes of right-wing media. And my specialty in particular is social media and new media, which, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners have heard, and if they haven't, has been grossly taken over by the far right and what has become known as the alt-right.
Awesome. So I guess you could say you're a bit of an expert. You've been following this group for a minute now.
Yeah, it's been a couple years. They sort of first got on my radar after Gamergate, which was this big online movement that ended up harassing a lot of female journalists who covered video games and different video game designers for introducing more women and progressive characters. And that was sort of the starting gun to all of this online. And so it's been on my radar then. And then a couple years ago is when I really decided to sink my teeth in and start watching it full time.
And when that happened with Gamergate, was I know that at that point it was mostly focused on misogyny and, you know, the fact that women were infiltrating the gaming community. And were there right wing politics attached to that rage at that point?
A little bit. It was mostly this motive, and we can talk about this later, that fuels this movement, which is the idea that social justice activists, or who they call social justice warriors, are somehow taking over the institutions they love. In this case, as trivial as it sounds, it was video games. But then when Trump came along, they saw that as a chance to get it into politics, too.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked before on the show that Bannon actually was doing a separate business venture. Steve Bannon was doing a separate business venture where he was like trying to make money mining for gold in World of Warcraft. And he came across this sort of Gamergate community and was like, wow, there might be a way to politicize all this energy. So it was like a conscious decision on their part.
Yeah, it was this huge movement, and Steve Bannon was one of the first people to really take advantage and start pumping it mainstream. Even after the white supremacist crowd saw it happening and decided they wanted to use it for their movement too.
Right.
You know, just this online culture of like shit posting and just trolling people and stuff. They thought like, hey, this is a useful weapon in defeating social justice warriors, so we can get these people on our side and use them for our advantage.
Right.
Have you seen, like, obviously Doug Jones won yesterday in Alabama. Have you, just from what you've been seeing, like, in the lead-up to the election, what was sort of been the alt-right stance in terms of of Roy Moore, or and now in the wake of the loss, has there been any kind of shifting of positions or anything like that?
So one of the core like pillars of the alt-right is this attempt to discredit mainstream media and what they see as a liberal order, a liberal establishment. So they wanted Roy Moore to win simply to counter that establishment. They were all totally aware of the pedophilia allegations, and, you know, were doing their own thing to try to discredit them. But in the end, it didn't really matter to them because they just wanted to send a message. Now, since Roy Moore lost, the 4chans and 8chans of the world just went into complete meltdown. There's kind of this all hope is lost, and then another vein of sentiment going on that, you know, Roy Moore was always crazy and wasn't really one of us, so it doesn't matter. Probably one of the bigger narratives is that the mainstream media, like, teamed up with the GOP to character assassinate the guy. And so they're sort of mourning the loss in a couple different ways, slowly going through the grieving process today.
So their conspiracy is that the Washington Post and the mainstream, like Mitch McConnell's of the world, got together and found these women and like concocted this whole story of Roy Moore being a pedophile. That's sort of it's interesting because they will concoct conspiracy theories about pedophilia to like discredit the Democrats. But when there's right. actual pedophilia, they will concoct conspiracy theories to ignore it, which I mean, there was this whole thing, Pizzagate, where they believed that there was a pizza restaurant where high powered Democrats were molesting children.
The underground tunnels? You can't forget that. And I'll say I've been to that restaurant just to have pizza, and there is no basement. So the tunnels thing really got me on Pizzagate. But show you the level of discourse we're dealing with.
So are there any myths about the alt-right or like things that you think, you know, we try and track the zeitgeist here, like things that you think the collective consciousness has wrong about the alt-right or the story of how they came to be?
I think that there's a few things. I think one is that Richard Spencer still holds any sort of prominence in the alt-right. He was extremely fundamental in lining out the core and setting the tone and the mission for the alt-right going forward, and was one of the main ones who helped bring it online. But when he got punched in the face on Inauguration Day, they all kind of abandoned him and have speculated that he's like a deep state operative who's meant to smear their movement and everything. So, and another one is that I think a lot of things that aren't necessarily alt-right get called alt-right. And that really discredits the term, because what happened after Trump's election is we saw the alt-right shatter into all these different movements. There's the new right, the Proud Boys, Chad nationalist, traditionalists, and went from this larger movement of people all banded together to help elect Trump to all these different fractured movements that just went to the furthest extremes of the ideology that they thought was most important that the alt-right embodied.
So can you talk about Chad nationalists? Because that was one of the more interesting sort of subspecies that we came across in tracking the news cycle.
Oh, yeah. Chad nationalism. Where to start on this one? So imagine your typical nationalism, you know, wanting to serve the interest of a nation first, so leading to policies that are anti-immigrant, leading to a foreign policy that's very non-interventional, but then hand it to some like super buff gym rats, and then also crank their heads full of all these misogynistic views, and you've got Chad nationalist. So these guys like to toss around the term soy boy as an insult, because part of this, what these guys believe is that if you eat too much soy products, it'll boost your estrogen and feminize you. Mm-hmm. And as like the insecure gym rats that they are, not to say all gym rats are insecure, but these people are definitely insecure. You know, that's like the worst thing that could possibly happen.
Right. It's a very like homoerotic sort of, we went to a website where they had all these pictures of like the ideal, like Chad is basically a name they came up with for like the ideal sort of white nationalist dude who like is that they're like, he's a sexy hero who lifts weights and like is a hero to women. And yeah, they had like all these pictures of like Arnold Schwarzenegger and like, you know, these 80s like homoerotic male bodybuilder types that they were like, these are great examples of like who a Chad nationalist should try to be. Just a very strange subculture.
And is there anything aside from like the idea of like hyper masculinity that like ideologically separates them from other groups, or it's their whole main thing is like, look, we're fucking ripped. All the ladies want to fuck and we hate immigrants. Like, is that sort of the platform? or is there something like even more specific? Like, it's like, well, actually, we're also very fiscally conservative.
Honestly, I think you got it, man.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so that's good. I want to make sure I'm reading the tea leaves correctly.
Proud Boys is an interesting one because they add the idea of, like, you don't masturbate, right? To the
wanks.
Equation?
Yeah, so there's different levels of being a Proud Boy. There's, like, four tiers. So for people, for your listeners that don't know, Gavin McInnes, who's a popular right-wing media personality, came up with this idea to create a fraternity for guys that support Trump. They're, again, maybe not Chad nationalist. There could be some crossover, but it's still that same hyper-masculinity boys club idea, and that women should be subservient and so on. But so in order, I'll just take you through the four levels of being a Proud Boy. So the first level is that you have to publicly declare on social media or whatever that you're a proud Western chauvinist and a member of the Proud Boys. The second tier is that no less than five already initiated Proud Boys repeatedly punch you until you can name five breakfast cereals.
So they're punching you and you're trying, while you're being punched, you're trying to prove that your brain can work well enough that you can name five breakfast cereals while they're beating the shit out of you, essentially.
Oh, yeah.
It's like being beat into a gang, but with a weird cereal twist.
The fucking lamest, weak-ass version. Like, hey, homie, we're going to jump you, and we'll punch you until you can name five cereals.
Yep.
Like, you could prepare for that beatdown. You could be like, I'm just going to, like, go Cinnamon Toast Crunch Chex Kix Rice Krispie Treats Honey Nut Cheerios. Like,
you just landed five punches, bro.
I'm good. I'll eat those.
Well, welcome to the Proud Boys.
Yeah, right. And then thank you. Okay, so that's level two.
I would actually just, for any aspiring Proud Boys, Chex, Rice Chex, Corn Chex, and you're out.
Just go out the Chex list.
Yeah, Chex is one syllable, nice and easy.
What else? So you're a Chex nationalist. So that's level two. What's level three?
Level three is the no wanks. So
no wanks.
Yeah, so you can't masturbate.
Yes, I can.
Unless you're within.
You're not a Proud Boy.
I have a reversion to anybody telling me I can't masturbate.
Well, you will go blind. But, okay, so the no wanks.
I apologize. So it's no wanks unless you're within like a certain distance of a woman and you get her consent. The idea being that not masturbating boosts your testosterone levels and unlock some sort of secret testosterone, super man powers that I am still unclear what exactly they are.
Yeah, because that's not quite scientifically based.
Right. Yeah, I think they say that to keep the optimal level of testosterone, like it's good to have some sort of cycle going where you're actually masturbating on a somewhat regular basis.
Well, and it's also built off that idea, like sports coaches, like, hey, don't fuck before the big game,
right, which or is
like,
not true.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, boxers don't actually do that unless they do, in which case they learned it from Raging Bull.
Yeah, and obviously, like, look, if you're looking up to somebody who's punching people out for a living and they're telling you they're fucking and masturbating on the regular, yo, maybe, like, listen to them,
right?
You know. All right, so that's level three. Don't masturbate and you will become superhuman. Okay, level four.
Final level is to punch a member of Antifa. So it's, this group claims not to be affiliated with the alt-right. But the fact that they're showing up at these, like, at protests like Unite the Right, just so they can get the chance to throw the punch in and ascend to the highest level, I definitely think puts some guilt on their hands for, the white supremacist, white nationalist, alt-right movement.
Right, because I remember...
I think it's a mistake to totally, you know, separate them from that.
Right, right, right. Because I remember, like, in the aftermath of Charlottesville, like, Gavin McGinnis was really clear to try and be like, yo, we had nothing to do with that. We had nothing to do with that. Because it's
Yeah, they all were. Like, these new right people, like the Mike Cernovich, Alex Joneses of the world, they were all doing the same thing. You know, I think after the election, the alt-right kind of fractured. And then when Charlottesville happened, people just started running in different directions.
Right.
Because everyone wanted to get away from the alt-right label.
In terms of looking ahead, what do you see their growth looking like, if any, or like recruiting tactics that they're using now? Is it a pivot, or is it kind of steadily growing? Like, what's sort of the forecast from your end?
So there's different factions that I think are all competing for the same group of, like, disaffected white people, or especially, like, young white men, like, college age or maybe fresh out of college and couldn't get the job that they thought they wanted to, or, like, think society is, you know, discriminating them or making them out to be a boogeyman. I think someone put a poll out that, like, somewhere between 40 and 50% of white people in the country feel somehow victimized right now. And I think the future for the alt-right or the new right or, like, God forbid, the Chad nationalist is to figure out how to talk to those people and inject the white nationalism into them and sort of play to maybe these subconscious fears that exist in the conservative voter base right now.
Right. And I guess, like, one of the last things I kind of want to ask about is, like, I've read a lot about how alt-right has, like, one of their biggest problems is getting women to participate. And essentially, since a lot of these groups are sort of built on these dated misogynistic ideas and shit, that they're having a real problem getting women involved. But then there are women who want to be involved in the movement, but they're realizing that men don't want to include them. So, like, is that like a thing that even men discuss in, like, alt-right, like, sort of these message boards? Because you see articles about the women talking about it, but I'm curious to know, like, if there's any, like, you know, inherently something that is so discriminatory is going to have trouble inviting more people to the table. So, like, how is that affecting things?
Yeah. So, to be a woman accepted in the alt-right, you really have to decry feminism and work against a lot of your own best interests as a woman. And that's really, like, the barrier to acceptance. But for the most part, a lot of people in these circles think that women are meant to be homekeepers and childbearers. And there's, like, an insane amount of slut-shaming that goes on, or attacking, you know, the media personalities trying to join the alt-right, you know, if they find some picture on Facebook of them dating someone who's not white.
Like Tommy Lauren?
It gets really nasty towards women.
I mean, eventually they're not going to have women to procreate with,
right,
to keep this thing going. Like, it's an odd sort of paradox.
Well, it started, it grew out of the soil of a, like, anti-woman movement, right? The whole Gamergate thing was, like, we hate women. It was just explicitly hateful towards women. So it's not surprising that that would be, you know, a problem that they would eventually face.
Yeah, and I think you're touching on something that sort of gets to the core of it, which is that, you know, through what you guys have been calling Benghazi, and various other parts of our culture right now, we're seeing all these, like, decades, if not centuries, of misogyny and horrible treatment of women trying to come to terms with the fact that women have begun to claim agency for themselves and are pursuing things like careers and, you know, oftentimes being very successful and threatening the status quo power structure that's been in place for so long. And I think that's really, like, a driving force that the alt-right's going to have to reconcile with if it is going to continue to grow. Because if they leave women out, that really leaves the only option is dominance and not any sort of resolution.
Right. I've described, and I've heard it described, that, you know, a lot of white people, especially young white people, were born on second thinking they hit a double. And I do think that there's some semblance of like acknowledgement that they have an advantage when you see these groups that are so, you know, viciously fighting against the rights of people who are, you know, who society is trying to raise up and, you know, give equal opportunities to. There's like, maybe it's not a conscious awareness of that, but maybe there's an unconscious awareness of the fact that, you know, they have had a huge advantage for a long time and they would like to continue to have that huge advantage.
Yeah, it's, you know, these young white men are experiencing like the most minor, tiny, like taste of what it's like to be looked over because of your sex or your race, and they just don't know how to handle it.
Right.
Which is, I don't know. It's hard to describe. It's something that a lot of these people that are a part of this movement have never dealt with or experienced before. So I think that, that you're right. That's where a lot of the anger and rage comes from in this movement.
And then just to wrap up, are you seeing any flagging of the momentum that sort of propelled Trump to the White House? And, you know, obviously there was the Doug Jones victory last night in Alabama. And, you know, are you seeing, as somebody who's been following and paying attention to the, you know, alt-right and just the right wing in general, are you seeing this as like part of a big movement, or is that just something that's happening while there's still this wave of, you know, right-wing hatred kind of building at the same time?
Yeah, so there's that wave of right-wing hatred, and I think that the people that are part of the alt-right, and I mean like the core, true white nationalist alt-right, realize that they're not going to get any of their own people elected, or at least we hope not, in 2018. But what they do hope to do is influence the level of public discourse in a way that pulls conservative candidates to the right, or influence the public discourse in a way that would make people more sympathetic to more extremist candidates like Roy Moore that we saw. You know, Roy Moore was like accused of sexually assaulting teen girls, and that is like appalling enough on its face. But before that, he was this like crazy religious right wing guy who thought that he could, you know, run the state out of a Bible instead of the law book, or what he interpreted to be the Bible anyway. So I think going forward, their goal is going to be more of a cultural one and less on one of promoting like Richard Spencer to the Senate or something.
Right. Just to be a factor, a force for evil.
Right.
Well, awesome. Well, thanks so much, Jared, for, you know, taking the time to talk to us. Again, guys, you should please check out rightwingwatch.org. It is a very interesting website. Like, they just really have their finger on everything and are doing great work. And yeah, Jared, tell people where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at JaredLholt. And I'm posting every day to rightwingwatch.org. And we're on Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff. So just did it up.
Awesome. Jared, thanks so much, man.
It was a pleasure. Thanks.
All right.
All right. That was our interview with Jared Holt from Right Wing Watch. And we are back with Megan. Megan, it has been such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
What a celebratory day.
It was
a happy I was here on a Doug Jones day and not a Roy Moore victory day.
I know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it would have been energized either way.
Yeah.
Where can people follow you on social media?
On my Twitter, Megan Gailey. My website got hacked by a Thai porn website, so don't go there right now.
That's
it's been
so
taken
strange.
Down, but there was Thai porn on MeganGailey.com. And then you can find me on Instagram. That's Better Megan Gailey, because some bitch had Megan Gailey, and I said, no, that's not happening. So
Best Megan Gailey comes out.
I actually own regular Megan Gailey now, too. Not regular. I own Megan Gailey
too.
I have that because she got married and gave it up.
Boom.
Ladies, keep your last name. You get to keep your Instagram.
But then you wouldn't have your handle.
Okay, well, if you're basic, take your husband's last name.
And that's spelled M-E-G-A-N, and then Gailey is spelled G-A-I-L-E-Y. Miles, where can people follow you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Grace.
You can follow me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can follow us on Instagram at The Daily Zeitgeist. We are on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We have a Facebook fan page. You know how to search words on Facebook. And you can find us on our website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes.
Footnotes.
Where we link off to the sources for all the shit we be talking. And that's going to do it for today. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you guys then.